Welcome, everybody. Thanks for coming back. We're now recording, and I want to take this opportunity to introduce the author of the case and also the person who's going to moderate the case, Mike Chinnitz. Mike is an employment attorney representing both management and as well as individuals. He is a 15-year Massachusetts super lawyer in the field of employment law and litigation. He's had a Martindale Hubbell AV preeminent rating for most of his 33-year career. Before starting Chinnitz Law in 2019, Mike worked at Nutter McLennan and Fish. And for 17 years, he was a partner at Rose Chinnitz and Rose, a litigation boutique in Boston. So the nice thing with Mike is that you get a Boston, someone with all the credentials and experience of an expensive Boston employment attorney, but he's got his own small practice with Elizabeth, and they don't charge the Boston rate. So it's a good opportunity if you're an employee. It's a good opportunity if you're an employer. So welcome, Mike. What I'd like to do now is to go to the different groups and kind of get perspective about what they would handle the case. So the first group is Angela, Cindy, Mindy, and Susan. Do you have a spokesperson?
All right, I'm the spokesperson for this all-woman group. And we had some great discussion. And felt like, regardless of his request for confidentiality, that legal liability was of a paramount concern here, and that we have a fiduciary responsibility to communicate and investigate. And once she's aware that we are investigating, that removes some of the power that she has over him. It's critical that her ability to interact with him and fire him needs to be eliminated. The rest of the board needs to be communicated with. She, however, we have to consider what is best for the company. And she certainly, with her contacts and long-term relationship in the industry, could make it difficult, particularly for a company who is about to go public. So the discussion needs to be with her that her actions are putting the company at risk. Ideally, we'd have a subcommittee, a small HR committee, to seek legal advice and counsel and, you know, evaluate whether she used any company assets, et cetera, in her threats, and therefore whether she should even be on the board. But the critical thing is not to have a tone at the top that this is this illegal activity is going to be permitted, and how determine if the culture of the company is impacted by this, and if so, we need some additional training on sexual harassment, etc.
Good. Thank you very much, Cindy. Group two is Bill, Craig, Glenn, and Robert.
Okay, so I'm going to be the spokesman for our group, and I'm going to preface our recommendations with a couple of observations. One is that we did consider the fact that we are getting his perspective on this only, even though we know the facts of the case. We're only getting his perspective. We don't know what her perspective is and how true his is. We also considered the potential damaging actions that she might take were we to try to remove her from her board seat. So with that background, we had three recommendations. One is that Robert should, he himself should inform the board, should report to the board, specifically the two private equity guys, and let them know what's going on. He doesn't want us to do it. Although we have a fiduciary responsibility, he did in confidence ask us not to go to the board. Therefore, we feel that he needs to have that conversation. We support an independent investigation to ascertain the facts, irrespective of whether we recommend keeping both of them or getting rid of both of them. And our third recommendation was that we should indeed remove both of them, her from the board position and him from his job. We had one last minute suggestion, which was to consider asking her to step down from her board role and elevating the CEO to that position.
Okay. Thanks. Thank you very much. Thanks, Craig. The next group is Afzal, George, Phil, and Robert.
So Larry, I was nominated to be our spokesperson. Our discussion of the case is almost a mirror of the first group, which Cindy presented for. So without going into all of the details, there was perhaps one key difference, and that's especially to the second group as represented by Craig. We think, in our experience, there's a solution to keep both and to ring fence the interaction. Specifically, Robert has to understand, coming to an independent director, that that has to go to the board. There is no other way. And instead of putting the onus on him, the independent director should do the right thing, but protecting Robert in every way. And I will say this, Larry, it's the most diverse group I've ever been in. What a fabulous opportunity to get to know George, Phil, and Afzal. So thanks for putting me in that group. Gentlemen, did I represent you well? Is there anything that you would have had me change?
Absolutely perfect. Larry, you're on mute.
Next group is Babs, Brian, Elizabeth, and Suzanne.
And this is Suzanne. We touched on a number of the same things, but I'll try and highlight some of the areas in which we had a little bit of a convergence. We definitely wanted to look at our policies, code of conduct, employment agreements to understand the lay of the land and whether those offered the proper protections. Having said that, if the allegations are true, because she is senior to him, the CFO, there's definitely a illegal situation going on. We also really worried about whether the CFO had been compromised in terms of being bribed, et cetera, based on some of the language in the case. So that concerned us. We also really took exception within the case itself about why we were getting this woman's relationship history, and we weren't getting his, and it seemed to be trying to cast her in a certain light, and so we really didn't like that. We talked about absolutely requiring an independent investigation, external. We did not think that, you know, even a small group from the board itself in an HR committee would be able to manage the complexities that will probably arise in this independent investigation, because you've got two people doing the wrong thing, but you also have some whistleblower protections that you need to be very careful of, et cetera. And we're really keen to preserve, as board members, we're keen to preserve the reputation of the company. And we also think there's opportunity, although we wouldn't go as far as the last group, we do think there's an opportunity to preserve the reputation of the two individuals in some way. So, you know, depending what comes out of the independent investigation, we do believe that both of them should go. And we had conversations about what would happen in terms of her stock, her holding of 25% in this firm. And I'm not sure we reached a full conclusion. I think where we ended up with that, and you guys can correct me if I'm wrong, I think we said that we were comfortable with her retaining it. In fact, we thought that since there's such extensive risk of collateral damage with all this going on and potentially becoming public, that it would probably be good for her to have skin in the game so she couldn't come and defame the company later on. We did believe very much that his hands are not clean and hers are clearly not clean. So we thought the best thing would be for them both to go.
Thank you very much, Susan. Next team is Craig, Ingrid, Jim, and Mark.
Okay, this is Jim Shields. I've been tapped to represent us. And we had one interesting, just lightweight, we started with the case, and there's probably a typo in the case, and that we've never seen a PE firm that would be patient enough to be around since 1968. But that's... That's not terribly relevant to the case, but we'll start with a light point. We all kind of concluded that there is, much like the others, that there's what should be done, which is they probably should both go. And then the more practical issues of what's likely to end up having to happen. If you look at it as an independent director, you clearly have to bring that to the full board. You can't be stuck with this. But if you look at the board, the other part of the board is going to split two and two because Sparks was brought in by the PE guys or people. And so he's probably got a relationship with them. And Sarah and the fifth board member are college roommates. So you're going to have some interesting dynamics within the board discussion associated with this. The other question really spent a fair amount talking about is how close you were to the IPO, and are you in the middle of that, or is that still on the horizon? And if it's on the horizon, you can deal with it one way. If it's imminent, then you need to decide whether it's something that has to be disclosed as part of the IPO package and so on. You've got the issues of, neither one of them are showing great judgment. You wonder with what you've heard about Sparks and so on, whether you can really trust him in terms of the books that he's keeping. And then you've got the other issues with Sarah associated with judgment there as well. But she has an important client relationships. Depending on, you might want to try to find a way to have them both stay, and that would entail some sort of independent firm to get involved and see if you can mediate and create something that's acceptable there. Again, the right thing is probably have them both go away, but from a practical point of view, depending on how close you are to the IPO and what the relationship is, and how the dynamics of the non-independent directors shake out, you're likely to have a little bit of a Mexican standoff associated with how things line up. So that's kind of where we're at. Clearly, you need to have outside advice relative to it. You need to have a clear record of having done something and what you're documenting your rationale for what it is you've done and how you ended up there. That's kind of about where we got. Did I miss anything, team?
No. Here we go, objections. Thank you very much, Jim. The last group is Afzal, John, and Mike.
Yep, and I'm taking the bullet on this one, Larry. We had very much similar discussion that Jim had, that there's clearly some wrongdoing, but being so close to an IPO that it made sense to try and find a way to keep them probably on the board or keep them in place, if they could work together going forward. It was we had a hard time where we had some real concerns. If you took it to the full board, you'd probably, as Jim was saying, have some differing opinions about who said what to who, and there's a lot of finger pointing. So it was, what we really came up with is we needed to be able to provide some support and guidance to each of them from either trusted family members, in her case, or wherever you could find the leverage to be able to do it. The other thing we did need to investigate is if any of the gifts or anything else came from company funds. That's a whole different story. That could be cause for, you know, termination right on its own for cause. So we were very much in line with Jim's group. It's how he was going to approach it, how they were going to approach it.
Well, and with that, thank you very much for your participation and your ideas. Mike, this was your case that you wrote. What's your reaction to what you're hearing?
So I wanted to create a fact pattern that was going to have some a little bit of twists and turns and not be kind of a garden variety sexual harassment situation.
Could you lower the cameras because we can't see your mouth?
Oh, sorry. Can you see me now better?
Yeah.
I wanted to have a fact pattern that had some twists to it that, you know, wouldn't be kind of a standard, more typical sexual harassment situation. I've handled cases both for companies and involving individuals where the relationship started as wholly consensual and then turned into something that wasn't. And, there's a lot of gray areas and there is a lot of ambiguity and there's some, you know, special problems. What I was thinking about a lot is the risk of adverse publicity. And what John and I spoke spent a lot of time in our private group about is like, how do you keep this confidential? I mean, you know, if you open this up to the full board, you have the full board, you have their, you know, people that are close to them. You obviously have the professionals in the company, you know, in-house counsel, HR perhaps, and is it going to leak? And once it leaks, is this the sort of thing that's going to lead to a lot of outrage? And you know, as John said, like, this was a Massachusetts company, the Herald would have a field day. They'd probably run 3 days of stories about something like this. But, you know, in terms of the approaches, I think that, you know, you can see that there was pretty much consensus in the room. For those of you who are a bit offended about like my focus upon the provocateur, the Sarah's kind of, you know, background and not his, I certainly wasn't trying to cast blame here. And, you know, it's a very fair point. And I think if I were to rewrite it, I would kind of talk more evenly about, you know, each of them, because when a relationship starts and it's consensual, it's really, there's equal fault in a corporate environment. It's not necessarily something that originates from power. It's not something that originates from influence. It can be very genuine romantic feelings for one another, and then it grows into something different and it becomes really challenging. And that's when the power can be exploited in a manner that's even worse than a lot of sexual harassment cases. Because, you know, once you have that consensual relationship, you're going to have a lot of secrets that are going to be known by each person to the relationship. And you're going to have, you know, like each person's going to know kind of like the soft underbelly of the other one. And you're going to have just a lot of more opportunity for, for kind of manipulating, you know, the situation. I wanted to have a situation where Sarah was viewed as not, you know, expendable. Like, you know, if she was just like the founder's daughter and she didn't have a lot to bring to the table, and she engaged in this sort of misconduct, well, you know, you just remove her from the board and it's kind of over. And the question, you know, you have two issues. One is, are her relationships in business, are they really pivotal to the company? That's one. Two is, John and I were talking about, like, what if she doesn't feel like she has anything to lose? Like, what if she has plenty of money from the original, you know, family business, and or she doesn't really care about how much money, and she's really infatuated with Robert, and she's like, hey, if I'm going to go down and lose my board seat, I'm going to go down swinging, and I'm going to let everyone know. And then the company's sunk. Then they're in a scandal that you know might really hurt them in capital markets. So it's funny. It made me feel like kind of a law professor. I've always wanted to be a law professor. I've had an opportunity to teach like as an adjunct at BU, and I always thought that one of the most fun things would be to write the problem and then see all the answers to it. Maybe I'll think about it if Elizabeth lets me. Down the road, I'll think about doing it. But that was, you know, the fun part. And Larry had a great hand in revising it, putting in some interesting twists. And so it was really a collaborative effort.
Mike, my reaction to your comments and also everybody's comments is that I think the first group touched on the issues about confidentiality. And one of the things that I learned from this case, or at least one of the takeaways I got from your case, Mike, is that if you're a board member and an employee of the company meets with you and they say, I want to have a meeting with you and I want this meeting to be confidential, I've sort of learned from this case is never, ever say yes. Because once you've said yes, you've now put yourself in a very awkward situation, as in the end of this case, because the board member said yes. I think one of the lessons that I got as a board member is if an employee asks for a conversation and they say, this needs to be confidential, I probably say, I can't promise it.
Absolutely. I mean, when I was talking about confidentiality, what I was referring to is confidential as between the board and the outside world, or confidential as between the board and like the rank and file employees within the company. John and I, when we started the conversation right off the bat, we said as the independent director, there'd be no way that you could promise confidentiality to Robert. And you'd have to tell him in the beginning that, look, you know, I got a duty. I have a duty to the company. I have a duty to my fellow board members. And I can't sit here and promise you confidentiality regarding the situation, especially before knowing what it is. And, if I was in Robert's position, if I was in the board member's position, you know, what I would be doing, my hardest job would be to try to persuade him that, you know, for the betterment of the company and his own situation, is to, you know, get experts involved. And we talked a little bit about executive coaches, psychologists, mediators, like a really skilled mediator, someone who, could try to bring the parties together and persuade Sarah about how destructive this was to her legacy, destructive to her wealth, destructive to all she and her dad, and her family work for. On the other hand, John and I recognize that, like, you know, people in love sometimes are completely blinded and they're obsessed and they don't listen to reason. I agree 100%, Larry. You could not promise confidentiality as a board member. I don't think you could promise confidentiality if you were an officer. Your duty of disclosure to the board, your duty of disclosure to your fellow officers would prevent you from, you know, giving an assurance of confidentiality to someone who came forward with something like this.
Any other reactions? I'm changing the subject from kind of sex issue as an issue to confidentiality issues. As board members, have any of you ever been in this kind of conflict where someone wants to talk with you on a confidential basis, and do you agree to that? Has anybody ever had that experience? Okay.
I have, and I agree with you, Larry. My answer is what? I can't do that. I have a responsibility to the shareholders, and if you want to share something with me, it's my obligation and duty to share it if it's relevant to the company.
Yeah.
Larry, Craig, I'd like to twist this just a little differently, because your confidentiality from the board to the investing public, and it goes back to, we talked a little bit about this, where is this company in its IPO path? Because if you get the two together and you have all these counselors and you suppress everything, you get it worked out, but you've still got, you may still have an issue there because you haven't disclosed this to the public. Was there any discussion along that line?
Yes, we talked a lot about the public and what would be disclosed. And one thought was that Sparks was not, he was not entirely a victim. There's a possibility he is. And on the other hand, he could be just setting this whole thing up. Like, he wants to break it up. Maybe he really didn't want to get out of it. There wasn't any bribing, but he wants to get out. And now he's playing the whistleblower hand where I'm going to see what I can get out of the company by telling him I don't want to leave. I want to be the one that stays. And he's just manipulating everyone and pretending that he's a victim. So he could be truly a victim, but then there's the other possibility. You definitely don't want a press release that says they both left on the same day. Just saying.
Anybody else have issues with confidentiality? Again, what is the confidentiality issues when you are a board member? Because you have a duty of loyalty to the company, duty of care. You know, have you ever been in a confidentiality situation where that's been tested?
One of my thoughts on this, let's say the conversation had happened, unknowing what was going to come out of the conversation, my first reaction would be to tell Robert he need to go to his company, his superiors, and disclose this, because I have a fiduciary duty to disclose it based on being on the board. But I would, if I were Robert, I wouldn't want my, you know, superiors to hear it in the board meeting for the first time, whether he'll do that or not, but that would be my advice to him. If we had that conversation, I wouldn't have the conversation if he started to say, well, you can't, it's got to be confidential. But sometimes you're in chit chat with people, right? And then they bring up something and all of a sudden you realize this is something that now I have a duty to disclose. So what would I do from there? And what I would do from there is say to Robert, you need to go to the PE firm and talk to your superiors about this. And oh, by the way, I now have a fiduciary responsibility to talk with them and the board. I mean, that was my initial reaction when I read the case.
And I've got two thoughts on this. Somebody that I knew who was vice president of human resources for a large company, he would always say, when you talk with me, you have to understand I am 51% for management and I'm 49% for you. And I think by framing it in that way, he would be upfront about his dilemma about confidentiality, that 51% had to be for his employer. I have a different approach because I'm a psychologist. Even when I'm doing coaching, and when I do outplacement, as part of my proposal, I say the meetings that we have with job candidates are confidential with respect to two limitations. If I feel that the person is going to harm someone, or, and that includes harm themselves, my duty to protect life is more important than my duty to, for confidentiality. I put that in every proposal that I've got. And in 40 years, I've only had one situation where that I was glad I did that. And it was a vice president who had been fired. And on Sunday, his wife calls me in agitation. He has a shotgun in his house, and he put the shotgun in the trunk of his car, and he told his wife he was picking something up at the office. And the CEO of my client company tended to work on the weekends. And I called the CEO and I told the CEO not to show up at the office. And the person I was working with found out that I did that and accused me of violating confidentiality and was really angry with me. But I was just glad I had this in my proposal that I said, I've been very clear about where my loyalty is. So sometimes it's helpful to deal with confidentiality at the proposal stage. George?
Yeah, thanks, Larry. And thanks for sharing that, actually. That's wild. I think two things that this points out is the importance for us as board members, you know, especially with small private companies, to make it a point to review our employee handbooks, process and procedures. And as board members too, to review our own bylaws and review what our responsibilities and, you know, for every board member to understand what the responsibilities are. Because a lot of people become board members to private, small private companies who are now embracing the board of director, you know, ideology, but they don't really know or understand what they're getting themselves into and the fiduciary, what the true meaning of fiduciary responsibility is.
And one other thing I wanted to add, if you are the victim of sexual harassment, and he truly is, he might not want this to be quiet. So even though the board wants it to be quiet, if you're the victim of sexual harassment, often the remediation you want is for that person to be ousted for what they are. So, you know, there's that to consider too, but we don't know without an investigation whether he is or he isn't, but yeah.
It's interesting. I know Mike wrote this case before the storm at the, I think it was called the Worldwide Federation of Wrestling. You could basically, In Mike's case, the CEO is a woman, and in this case, the CEO is a man, but it seems very, very similar kinds of situations and similar end results. Anybody else?
There's a lot of money.
Larry, I ran into a situation like this about 3 or 4 years ago. I'm president of a small nonprofit. It's across North America, but it's small. And I was told something in confidence, and I had to take it to the board. It was connected to the Varsity Blues thing, and it was going to be all over the newspapers within 48 hours that I knew it. And I told the guy, I said, you know, you're my friend. I've known you for a long time, but I've got to tell the board. Mm-hmm. So there's really no, when you get right down to it, there's no choice.
Again, one very specific thing to consider is having the nominating and governance committee of the board of directors really deal with the issue about confidentiality, what the limits are of confidentiality, and put that in the bylaws and make sure every board member understands what do you do, what do you say when someone says, I'd like to talk with you in confidence. There should be a common script that everybody knows and everybody says. Bill, you wanted to say something?
Yeah, I mean, I was just going to say that. I mean, it. You mentioned the WWE, but you know that was a situation where there was clearly a lot of money that passed hands as a result of this and failure to disclose and so forth. So in a way that's a little bit easier. I mean, I was listening to a podcast today and they're talking about Elon Musk and how Elon Musk has just recently, it's been announced that he had twins, I think, from a relationship that he had with an employee at one of his many companies. It's Elon Musk, okay, so people, you know, have their own view of that. Probably no money passed hands. But in our group, we did talk a lot about sort of, you know, particularly in the going public context, what is there that's in this fact situation that may need to be disclosed to the outside world? I think in our case, we felt that we wanted to, you know, have the Band-Aid ripped off and we'd rather go public clean than worry about what might come out in the woodwork after we're public.
Yeah. Well, I want to thank you all for participation in the case. And I want to thank you, Mike, for writing the case and moderating the discussion. We will be meeting next month at this time, the last Thursday of the month. And we will be having a different case more. And the issue is you are on the board of a company where there has been an explosion. People have been killed. And the CEO tells you everything's under control. What are you going to do? So you stay tuned for that case. And we look forward to seeing you next month. Take care. Enjoy the summer. Take care,
everyone. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.